Biff. Every night before he went to bed, Biff's mother would read a picture book to Biff. And Biff's favorite book was Good Night, Moon. And whenever his mother finished reading that book, which you all know, Biff would look outside of his bedroom window and he would wish that he could just fly and fly away to the moon. Anyway, one morning, Biff's mother came home with a new stove, which came in a large box, and that gave Biff an idea. Biff asked for the large box that the stove came in, and then with his mother's help, they cut a hole in the side of the box for a window. Biff then borrowed a kitchen stool and loaded up on cookies and licorice and other supplies, and he told his mother, "From now on, you must call me Spaceman Biff." And he said that he was going to fly away to the moon. And would she like to come along? Biff's mother replied, "Yeah, but you know we can't fly to the moon." "Yeah, but you're just 5 years old, and neither of us have gone to astronaut school, and the box is too small to hold both of us anyways, and if I went, then I couldn't cook supper for you and your dad." And what she meant was, "Yeah, what a great idea, but I don't really feel like it." Or perhaps she meant, "Yeah, but I'm too busy for you right now." "Yeah, but..." We've all heard it, said it a million times. "Yeah, you affirm the speaker because something deep inside of you knows that the speaker gets it, that the speaker has spoken truly and has spoken well." "Yeah," followed by "but," a barely polite, almost underhanded way of undermining what you just said yeah to, while rationalizing away your no with that but. Today's parable is for everyone who has ever said, "Yeah, but," and that includes me, by the way. The parable goes like this. The kingdom of heaven. What's Jesus talking about? Well, Jesus is talking about how things on earth should be as in heaven, as in the Lord's Prayer. So Jesus is talking about utopia. He's talking about Shangri-La, the best of all possible worlds right here and now. Jesus' parable is about a world where, you know, it would be a world where prisons have room to spare because crime is so low. It would be a world where global warming has become gentle global cooling. It would be a world where there's plenty of profit for entrepreneurs and plenty of jobs for the poor. The biblical word for the kingdom of heaven is shalom. Anyway, back to the parable. Matthew says that the kingdom of heaven, or shalom on earth, is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. A landowner? A landowner, thinks Jesus' audience? Wonderful. You see, when Jesus lived, few Jews owned vineyards anymore because the occupying Romans had used their tax system to bankrupt all Jewish farmers. So the few Jewish farmers who did own vineyards were mostly enemy collaborators, but Jesus wouldn't tell a parable about the enemy collaborators. So a landowner who was a Jew? So already in the first line of this parable, Jesus is suggesting that one day good Jews will again own land and they'll grow grapes and they'll work for a good wage. And all the people who are listening to this parable think, yeah, that's heaven on earth. Very nice. So back to the parable. Matthew says that the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers, and so he did. A little later that day, the landowner went to town again. The parable doesn't say that he went to town to find laborers, by the way. No. He wasn't looking for workers. He just went out. He was a man of leisure, a rich man, who had time to do what he wanted to do. He had time to walk about town. And when he did so, he found people just standing around looking for work. Not because they didn't want to work, they really did want to work, but no one had hired them. They were lined up on the street corners the same way that I've often seen undocumented Mexicans, for example, lining up on street corners all over the towns of Southern Texas and Southern California. Seeing these people desperate for work, the landowner decided, oh, I am going to hire these people. He was a rich landowner who was deeply compassionate. So when he was out for a walk at noon, at 3, at 5, and just before quitting time, he hired everyone he saw. And the people in the audience, they are shaking their heads listening to Jesus, and they're saying, yeah, what a great guy. This would be heaven on earth. So finally, it's 6 p.m., and it's time to pay the workers, and they line up, and I'm going to do this in reverse from the parable just to make the point. The workers who spent most of their day in the vineyard from early on, they get an honest day's wage. Yeah, heaven on earth. The workers who come at 9 also get a full day's wage, and the earlier workers then raise their eyebrows and say, hey, what's going on? And the workers who started at noon and 3, and also the workers who only work for an hour, get a whole day's wage. And so the workers who came first, the workers who came early in the day, they say, yeah, but, yeah, but if they get a full day's pay for an hour's work, then we ought to get more. Yeah, but it isn't fair that I get sunstroke and this guy or gal who came at 5 p.m. didn't get sunstroke but still gets the full day's wage. And so on. Yeah, but not fair. The landowner responds, friends, I'm not doing you any wrong. Did you not agree to work for me for the daily wage? Are you envious now because I'm a generous landowner? Now remember, this is a parable about the kingdom of heaven on earth, a parable about how things should be. So in Jesus' kingdom, everyone, regardless of how long they work, everyone gets a living wage. Nice. In Jesus' kingdom, as we discovered a few weeks ago, there is neither male nor female. There is neither gay nor straight. There is neither Jew nor Greek nor black nor First Nations. It's good. In Jesus' kingdom, you let children come or baptize adults, as the case may be. All are welcome. In Jesus' kingdom, you give your coat to the poor. You give water and bread to the prisoner. You turn the other cheek to your enemy. You open your door to the stranger, and so on. And we usually say, yeah, but. Yeah, we're for an end to racism, yeah. But blacks have to understand that they shouldn't look threatening walking down the street. Yeah, we're for an end to racial profiling, but those First Nations people in our jails, they were really dealing drugs and creating a disturbance. We've got to do something about it. Yeah, we're for an end to poverty, but all those homeless people are mentally ill, or they're lazy, or they're uneducated, or they're stupid, or they're asking for it. Yeah, we're for an end to global warming, but you know the Chinese are burning all that coal, and what can we do about that? Yeah, we're for a peaceful settlement to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, yep. But those Palestinians have to stop using violence to get the Israeli army conquered people out of there. Yeah, I'm for that. But it's a way of agreeing in principle, but excusing yourself of ever having to go there. In English grammar, but is what's called, I used to be an English professor at Calvin College, so I know this. In English grammar, but is what is called an adversative conjunction. Adversative, as in adversary, as in enemy. The but in most yeah but statements is a fighting word, lightly camouflaged so that you can remain polite. Look, I know that a living wage for everyone, an end to racism, an end to global warming, I know those are very difficult goals. And I know that in our pursuit for social justice, we can burn out, we can get bored, we cannot be bothered because we're too busy with our leisure. I mean, these things happen. I know that the problems we face on planet Earth are huge, so huge that they sometimes seem impossible to fix. Heaven on Earth? It seems like a pipe dream. Yeah, but two things. First, the right response in each such situation is not to fight the dream or to deny it with a but. When someone tells you what they're doing or what needs to be done or their vision for the good life or a great country, when someone says that to you, then your correct response is to say, yeah, what can I do to help you? Or, yeah, so what's your next step? Or, yeah, I hear you. That concerns me too, even though I'm focused on another issue in my personal life, and I don't really have the time to help you with your issue, but go for it. The right response is usually not, yeah, but. It is rather, yeah, tell me more about that. I'm listening. You know, none of us can, and none of us have been asked to sacrifice everything to work on all the things that we know need to be changed. There's a lot wrong in the world, after all. Most of us can only work on maybe one or two things really seriously at a time. So do that. Don't burn yourself out, while at the same time opening yourself to listening empathetically to and encouraging and dreaming with other people about their projects. Don't, yeah, but them, because you're feeling guilty that you can't get that involved, on that issue at least. No, don't, yeah, but them. Bless them. Secondly, in this parable, the hero, the landowner, is a rich man. He is unlike his workers in that he has leisure and extra resources, he has land and comforts. He is living the life of Riley in ancient Israel. So notice that Jesus doesn't condemn this person for being rich. Jesus doesn't go and immediately ask him for a big donation to his favorite cause. Jesus doesn't wag his finger at him and insist that he has to pay everyone a living wage, even though he already is. Jesus doesn't go to this rich man like he goes to many others in the gospel and say, go, sin no more. Jesus doesn't do any of those things. No, Jesus actually seems to like this rich man quite a bit. And I think that's something that more than a few of us in this congregation need to wrestle with a little bit and keep in mind and wonder about. In this case, at least, riches are okay with Jesus. He was the one who said, after all, in John chapter 10, I came that all may have life and have it abundantly. However, when it comes to social justice, don't let your riches, whether you have come by them through hard work or inheritance or good luck, don't let your riches make you feel like a second-class citizen when it comes to social justice. The rich, and by world standards, most of us who are even middle class in Canada are certainly rich, again, by world standards. The rich are a very strategic player in the cause of creating a kingdom of heaven on earth. No buts about it. If you have the financial resources, even if it stretches you, you can do a lot for social justice or for some other cause. More maybe than the guy who only found work for an hour in the parable. You are the ones who, like the rich landowner, have the greatest opportunity, financially at least, to be generous with your resources and time. And this, in a world of want, this is a great and wonderful privilege. The thing is, whatever your gift, time, money, perhaps wisdom, insight, experience, whatever your gift, bring it to the table. And say, yeah, yeah, to the kingdom of heaven on earth. Amen.